From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 are at an all-time high in Alaska. Nearly a dozen more people were admitted to the state's overwhelmed hospitals yesterday, where one in five patients are sick with the virus. Today, there are nearly 200 people in the hospital with COVID-19. Most of those patients are unvaccinated. Gene Weissman works for the state's COVID-19 response team.
Our hospitals are stressed. There is no joke of, there's no argument about that, right? But we're trying to level the playing field as best we can.
To do that, the state's health department began daily capacity check-ins with all of the state's hospitals this Tuesday. Hospitals report on their capacity and can send patients to the places in the state with open beds. The health department also requested nearly 500 healthcare workers from the federal government. According to the state's data, almost all of South Central and Interior intensive care units are full or near capacity. Doctors in the state have repeatedly warned that the system is at its limit. Hospitalizations have roughly doubled since state hospital officials sounded the alarm about a month ago. Just over 60% of Alaskans 12 and older have had their first dose of the vaccine, which is below the national average. State health officials reported 16 new COVID-19 cases for Juneau, 14 residents, and 2 visitors. Case counts in Juneau remain high. So far this month, the community is averaging 24 new cases a day. Juneau School District reported 4 new cases, including 3 at Zontikahini Middle School and 1 at Thunder Mountain High School. No classes have been quarantined as a result. The state's local public health office reported that most case activity in these schools is showing up in elementary schools, the age group that isn't yet able to be vaccinated. There are 2 people currently being treated for COVID-19 at Bartlett Regional Hospital. Hospital system throughout the state and in the Pacific Northwest is constrained. Bartlett officials say they've had occasional difficulty transporting patients as ICU beds in other places are full. Statewide, 841 new people were identified with COVID-19. The state also reported 6 deaths. Nearly 70% of Juneau's total population is fully vaccinated. The CDC recommends mass COVID testing at schools and places where transmission levels are high. That label, right now, applies to the entire state of Alaska. Only some school districts, however, are doing any kind of surveillance testing, and almost all of the state's largest school districts are not. Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media has more.
Every Wednesday is testing day at the elementary school in the Yukon River village of St. Mary's. And Superintendent Didi Ivanov shows up to meet staff and students who need to get swabbed.
So we have them lined up in the hallways. We have markers where they are to stand. So we're still practicing social distancing. Even when you get down to the kindergarten age and preschool age, they know exactly what to do.
The whole process takes an hour. The school is using rapid antigen tests. The program has been in place since last year, and so far not a single student has tested positive, Ivanov says.
Just going down the line and watching each one, it's a really good feeling to know that the measures we're putting in place, it's paying off.
This kind of testing is known as screening, and it's one of the main things the CDC recommends for slowing the spread of COVID in schools. One model, which hasn't been peer-reviewed, shows that weekly testing of half of students could reduce cases by 50% in schools with required masking and low vaccination rates, though the effects were smaller if those variables changed. Dr. Ann Zink, the state's chief medical officer, says the most effective tool to cut down the spread of the virus is vaccination.
The next big difference is masking. But that particularly when you aren't doing those things, testing can make a difference, and testing makes more of a difference when you don't have kids who are vaccinated.
The state has offered to support districts that want to do screening testing, and some have launched programs. Juneau is requiring weekly testing for athletes and offering it to staff. And in back-to-school meetings, Kodiak teachers asked if parents, particularly of unvaccinated children, wanted to sign them up for weekly screening. But in 4 of Alaska's largest school districts on the road system, there's no mass screening testing happening at all, even though most don't require masking. Tom Roth, the chief operating officer in Anchorage, where masks are required, says there's no way the district's 100 nurses could manage weekly testing for 50,000 students and staff.
So, do the math. You got every nurse doing some 490 surveillance tests of everybody in the district a week.
But large districts outside the state have made it work. In Utah, schools are required to conduct mass testing to avoid moving to online learning when COVID cases rise above a certain threshold. And in Maine, many schools are doing pooled testing where multiple samples are combined into one test with individual follow-ups in the event of positives. Roth, the Anchorage operating officer, says that if Anchorage were to institute a mass testing program, it would need to be led by an outside agency, like the city or state health departments.
We think it's important, not for lack of interest or desire or seeing the efficacy of doing it. It's a capacity matter.
State officials, however, say that the district was eligible for a $5.5 million grant that could have gone toward a screening testing program. But Anchorage officials declined to even apply. In a prepared statement, district officials said that was because the grant would have placed unrealistic expectations on its administrators and staff. With help from Iowa Ina in Anchorage, I'm Nat Hers.
The U.S. Department of Education has approved the state of Alaska's plan for spending over $358 million in relief funds to help schools recover from the pandemic. About two-thirds of the funds were distributed earlier this year. The approval of the spending plan releases the rest, about $119 million, to the state.
It is a lot of money. So if you were to take the CARES Act funds and the CERSA funds, those two first pots of money, put those together and then double it.
That's Deborah Riddle, an operations manager for the Alaska Education Department, who handled the fiscal details of the state's spending plan. School districts are required to spend 20% of the funds on addressing learning loss, but Riddle says districts are also taking advantage of the influx of cash to fund other things like building upgrades.
Ventilation type activities, you know, replacing windows, working on air quality type activities.
Most of the money went directly to school districts to spend, but the state did keep about $25 million, Riddle says. The state will use some of that money to fund contracts that can go to organizations other than local districts to create programs or products that will help schools recover from the pandemic.
We're kind of counting on the innovation of the folks who have these great ideas that we can fund. That might be more things that will last, like maybe if there's a product or something that we want created, or you know, something like that.
Riddle says districts will also be able to apply to the department for grants and additional funds that can support the projects they come up with to address learning loss, support after-school programming, and summer learning activities. U.S. Bureau of Land Management is expected to reevaluate a Trump-era environmental review that provided a basis for plans to reopen an additional roughly 6.8 million acres in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, to oil and gas leasing. A memo outlining the planned review accompanied government filings in lawsuits brought by conservation and environmental advocacy groups. Those lawsuits challenged the adequacy of the environmental analysis underpinning the plans that were finalized in the final weeks of the Trump administration. U.S. Justice Department attorneys have requested stays in the cases pending the new evaluation. One of only nine remaining Klan houses in Sitka is on the verge of collapse. The historic property is deeply rooted in Sitka's Klan traditions, and its passing is a significant milestone. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The century-old frame house is one of a pair side-by-side on Catlan Street in a historic district of Sitka that was resettled by Tlingit following conflict with the Russians in the 19th century. The house itself was built later in the early 20th century and was steeped in tradition even then.
So this house was called Dakina Hit. And some people translate that as the far out house, but it comes from a very ancient raven story about how raven pulled the salmon house to shore from the open ocean. And that's how the salmon began to swim upstream.
Robbie Littlefield is chair of the Sitka Historic Preservation Commission and a Tlingit language scholar.
So it is a Koho or Chupnachedi house. And when the Yakutat people moved to Sitka in the 1800s, they brought their house with them in by name. And when they built this house, it also became the newest Dakina Hit.
The ownership of Dakina Hit is caught in the gray area between cultures. In Western culture, ownership passes from parents to children, or in other words, it's familial. In Tlingit culture, clan identity and ownership are matrilineal, and marriages are between members of different clans. So when a father dies and his property reverts to his children under Western laws, that property also moves under the care of a different clan, which can lead to problems. As complicated as this becomes, Littlefield says that it's important to reflect on what the loss of Duckanahit means.
What it means to the community is that we've lost one more of our ancient structures that embodies the history of the Tlingit people. And the only reason that we can even recite this history in the 21st century is because that house is standing.
Duckanahit is slumping into the embankment behind it and looks like it could further collapse and slide into the roadway. Sitka police plan to keep the street closed indefinitely until the city works out a stabilization plan with the owners, and that will be difficult on several levels. The house may not be saved, and Littlefield says that should be acknowledged.
This house had a spirit, and it's passing away. It's leaving our world now.
Littlefield says that in the Tlingit worldview, Duckanahit will remain alive only as long as people remember it. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Residents in Wrangell and Petersburg can now text 911 for emergency services when calling is not an option. Petersburg Police Chief James Kerr says it's designed for the hearing impaired or for domestic violence situations when someone can't make a voice call. Another option would be to use it during an active shooter situation when someone wants to give information to authorities without giving away their position. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.